jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the Round 15 Supercoach Coach podcast. My name's Marcus and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. I'm feeling a bit angry this week. Feeling pretty shattered by Friday night, the old loss after the siren. I don't understand how that happened. 19 points in 4.5 minutes. And what makes it worse is talking to you, you lucky prick. How the hell does he miss that goal? It's like lining up from 15 meters out on the run and he misses to the left. And I don't understand why you're so lucky and I'm not.
Yeah, so we're on Sydney, Faz and I on the weekend, and we caught the game together, Sydney Bombers, and he called it with 4 minutes to go. And by the end of the game, he was like, nobody talk to me, please, nobody talk to me. And then on Sunday, I unfortunately was at an event and had to miss the first half of the game, went to a pub in Sydney to watch the second half and completely lost it with strangers. It was a fantastic round for my team. But in Supercoach news, Mark, we're hit with a fair bit of bad luck. So I'm glad I had my team to help balance that out this week. I can understand you being sort of extra frustrated with both Supercoach and your footy team this week.
It was the Bombers. Then it was Beams. Then it was bloody Selwood. Yeah, not good.
Yeah. All right, so before we get into our personal update, let's just have a quick talk about what we're going to cover in today's show. We'll talk about replacement options for Beams. We'll talk about luxury trades. A lot of people are considering trading out their worst premium on field at the moment, so it sounds like quite a few of our listeners have already completed their teams, which is fantastic because that's been the theme of our show the last couple of weeks. And then we're also going to look into the bargain bin, looking at players that are currently underperforming and therefore at an ebb in their price and have the potential to return to premium scoring, but obviously there's question marks about them because they've not managed to do that in recent history. So we will cover those players as well. So before we get into all of that, a quick team update. I'll kick us off, Mark. I scored 20.73. I hated Supercoach so much this weekend. I did not even look at how you went, so I have no idea. You've beat me. I was pretty happy to get Hugh Greenwood's score on field, but that was massively negated by Tom Lynch's 39 as well, Mark, which you didn't have. Beams 12 was a killer. Selwood 3 was a killer. But then Treloar being a bit down as well on the 91. Fife obviously missing. I've held on to him again. So just so many underperforming premiums that was really hard to hold on to a decent rank. So I absolutely plummeted. Now I'm sitting outside of the top 1,000 at 16.34. And yeah, pretty devastated about that. It's just unfortunate that, you know, that much sort of bad luck converged on a single weekend. You know, it was crazy to see Parsons score an 82 as well, you know, in a week where the premiums on field scoring 3 and 12 when Parsons normally scores in the 40s. So it was just, yeah, not brilliant, Mark, not brilliant. But I'm keen to put this behind me. I'm keen to not look at this round again. I'm keen to already do a trade so I don't have to remember how my team looks like in round 14.
There was two redeeming factors to the weekend. One was we got to see a crap load of really good games and really exciting games. And it was a very fun round of football to be just a neutral supporter in a lot of games. And the second redeeming factor was that I'm only 15 points behind you now. And I know that that made you feel crap, but that kind of had the reverse effect on me. So I think that Bontempelli doing well was probably a difference between our teams. And I still had Selwood and Beans. Like, and I only dropped 400 spots. I scored 21.84. To have both of those guys and only drop 400 spots, I thought was a really, really good result. I don't think I've ever had two players go down in the first 5 minutes in the same weekend before. It is kind of season defining though. So like even the people that don't have Selwood now, they're going to be able to get him for so ridiculously cheap as bench cover or whatever. So yeah, it's pretty annoying when that happens. But yeah, I was barracking for Tommy Lynch to not do a whole lot on the weekend, and that seemed to happen.
In terms of our Supercoach Coach group, Adrian or Wits Wizards scored 24.63, which is bloody unbelievable. Well done to you, Adrian. Overtook me by 400 points in 1 week. That's fairly unbelievable. And in terms of the overall leader, that's Kyle's Tyrannosaurus Tex currently sitting at third. He scored 23.44 to move up into that position. And Paul's PK's Bench Warmers scored 24.16, so a notable score as well to move into sixth. In terms of a league update, happy to report that at least our leagues are still performing well. We still hold the first league overall, which is fantastic. And the Patreon league has moved up into second, which is great to see. And we still have 16 of the top 20 leagues. So a massive shout out to our community. It sounds like not all of you were hit with the same bad luck that Mark and I were. And so we're pretty happy with that, Mark. At least everybody else is still flying the flag this week.
Did you say we have 16 of the top 20 leagues?
16, yep. That's a PB. Forever, but yeah.
Forever by anyone, yeah.
It's round 14 and we haven't been counting down to round 23 yet, Mark, but only 9 rounds away now. And I think we've said this multiple years on end, but this should be the best shot we've ever had. So we'll see how we go.
Keen for the Patreons to take the title as well. That'd be kind of fun.
Absolutely. That'd be fantastic. So let's start with the actual show now, Mark, and start with the injury trade question. Brad or at BXE100s asking for the best replacement for Dane Beams. Mark, we've talked a little bit about sort of top scoring options, and I think we talked through that last week with Dunny and Faz. So instead of looking at that angle, I was hoping to maybe look at potentially some uniques, potentially some more value options, because I think if we're looking at, you know, the top end scoring options, you can sort by average and you can refer to last week's show and that should sort of cover you off. I'm going to spend a bit more focus on the other blokes. Anyone spring to mind?
Sure. Can I give you three that I don't know how exactly unique they are, but just at three different price points. So the number one player that I'd be picking would be Dustin Martin. I know that he probably has shown himself to be a little bit injured the last couple of weeks, but just his ceiling is just so high. But 633,000, you don't get a lot of value there. The number two pick that I would have is Zach Merritt, young, super durable. Has had, I think, over 25 possessions every single game this year. A couple of scores under 80, under 100, but also a bunch of scores above 120. I think he's probably the most likely for my team. And the other one is Bontempelli. The last 2 weeks, I know he didn't score amazingly 2 weeks ago, but in the last two games, he has actually played as a midfielder, not as a centre-half forward. So I think that's a big change. And he, if the Bulldogs are going to make the finals, he's in for a big second half of the year.
Yeah, I think the fact that Bont has had, or prior to last week, had 5 weeks under 100, and the fact that he's still averaging 112 for the season speaks volumes to his upside. So I really like the Bont selection. And we did get a question about him from Joe on Facebook asking whether or not he's back. I don't know if he's going to necessarily smash it to the degree that he did over the first 7 rounds where he was averaging something like 120 plus, but I think 115 plus is definitely within grasp for the run home, and that'd be exceptionally good at that price point. At 518,000, I think he this week offers the best value to sort of premium scoring ratio. I think there's a couple of blokes that are cheaper, but you'd have a few more question marks over their ability to potentially average 115.
Yeah, I agree with that. And if I didn't have him, I'd probably be looking to bring him in.
Yeah. Otherwise, I also really like your Dusty Martin selection, Mark. But if you wanted a POD, I think Merritt's very interesting selection because he's in only 20,500 teams as compared to Dusty, who's in 70,500. Even Sloan at 40, Bont at 70, Pendlebury at 50. Merritt's actually really unique considering just how high scoring he actually is.
Yeah, I guess another one. What do you think about Tommy Mitchell, who seems to have been just that little bit off the last couple of weeks?
I talked him up last week in terms of a top five finisher. I think he's just so consistent that he's upside when he does score it is enough to push him into that 115 category. So his lowest score for the year, 85. His next lowest, 101. Everything else is obviously, you know, above 100. So I think he's just so consistent that I find it hard to see him sort of dropping out of that top five.
Any of the Sydney boys, Kennedy, Hanbury or Parker, interest you?
No, I don't think so. I think if I was looking for a unique player, then maybe Neil, because he's still in under 15,000 teams and his 55 only just cycled out of his price movements last week. So he to me still looks like a reasonably attractive option. Yeah. Pendlebury, for those that don't have him, including myself, I think he's still a good buy. But yeah, I don't think I'd go to the Sydney blokes. I think I'd rather take the punt on a player like Cripps potentially. And we did also get questions about him. He stormed home at the end of last year, Mark. I'm not quite sure if you remember that, but
definitely do, sir.
I think because he had an interrupted preseason this year, and he traditionally builds throughout the season, he seems like another player that you could potentially want to take a punt on. Scored 134 on the weekend against Richmond.
You might have talked about this last week, but is Rory Sloane just like written off now?
I talked about not wanting to trade him out, but definitely not wanting to trade him in.
Yeah, that seems fair.
Yeah, we did get questions about why we were ruling out Sloane, even though he scored a 177 only 4 rounds ago in round 10. But I think the fact that he's since continued to sort of be mediocre has spoken to the risk. But again, it's like if you already have him, the fact that he can score in the 80s in 1 week, sort of just spike into the 177 and help lift that average up, makes it very, very difficult to pass on him.
I guess just 2 out of his last 7 games over 100, even though one of them was 177. It's pretty tricky to bring someone like that in. Can I ask who you think you'll be bringing in?
I'm looking at Bont. The price point is okay. Too good to pass up. Otherwise, Pendlebury would be my option B.
Okay.
It feels like it could be a mistake passing on Dusty at this point in time, but the injury news has me cooled on him slightly.
Yep, and he definitely seems to have been playing a bit injured the last couple of weeks. He hasn't been dominating games like he was in the 2 weeks previous to that. Personally, I'm looking at Zach Merritt, if I didn't go for him, then I think that Pendlebury or Lucky Neil would be the two I'd consider.
All right, let's move on to talking about these luxury trades now, Mark. The first question here is from Blair Smith. Do you trade out Heath Shaw or Nick Newman potentially, or do you not trade at all? We've talked about Shaw for multiple weeks now. I've been so ridiculously frustrated, and I had the opportunity to trade him out, you know, at round 13 around the buys to resolve a donut, and I didn't. I mean, this bloke has not hit the ton for me this entire fucking season since I've traded him in. Like, did you trade him out, Mark?
No, I didn't, mate. I could have, like, as in I had trades up my sleeve. I didn't actually trade going into round 13, which was a bit weird around the buys, but I just couldn't justify, like, moving him to anyone because he wasn't worth very much. He sort of, everyone at around his price point probably posed a similar risk. So, I just ended up keeping him, and I couldn't believe he posted a 60 and he's 250th against the Lions. Like, if you're ever going to score well, that's going to be the game.
Yeah, I'm really starting to lose hope. The only reason I'm not turfing him straight away is Newman's actually sort of my 7th defender at the moment. So I'll sort of pivot between Shaw and Newman until Shaw turns things around.
Yeah, I think at this stage of the season, if you can, and I know it's not always possible, but I think I'd like to bring in maybe try and get him to the bench or something. I think it's pretty late into the season to be trading premiums, and it's hard to get a lot of value out of that. Like, say you trade into a 95-point game per player and Shaw averages 85, that's only 70 points. Like, it's really hard to get a big upside on that trade.
So that is a question that we did get, Mark, whether or not we're better off trading into bench backups or trading out premiums for sort of elite premiums at this stage of the season. So there's pros and cons to either option. I think you have to commit more trades in order to create bench options and to an extent decimate your rookies a little bit more than you would otherwise. The downside to trading out premiums is that it's quite sideways. And like you said, Mark, at this point in the season with only, you know, 9 rounds to go, that may not be enough to sort of extract value from. So interesting.
Like, for Shaw to work, say you did Shaw to Doherty, which is an insane 210,000, which is like a clear upgrade. But say the prices were a little bit more similar and Shaw averaged 85, Doherty 120 for the rest of the season. Even then, you're not getting a lot more than 300 points. Like, that's a really, really good result, but that's like the biggest margin in scoring you could possibly imagine. So it's hard to get anything near that as a result.
Yeah, I think unless you're looking at must-haves, maybe Yeo in the forward line and Doherty in the back line are the two that fall into that situation, and Dangerfield in the midfield. Like, there's not really that many players that you can definitively say, like, it's a major step change from a premium.
No, because every time we do say someone's a must-have, they get injured or they score 3 or they get tagged for 4 weeks. Like, Sloan, like, it's been a really weird season and it's hard to predict what's going to happen next.
Yeah. So I think you kind of need to, in terms of deciding whether or not to sideways a premium or instead try and bring in better bench cover, which I think is the preferable option, Mark, because when you're bringing in bench cover, you have the opportunity to both gain points from loopholing, but also in case of any injury, you get to sort of maximize points that way. I think that the main consideration, though, you want to look at when deciding between those two is just how deep does my bench run at the moment. If you're trading in rookies that you're really not confident about, and you're trading out really good rookies in order to do that, like Newman, you know, you've got to question whether it's worth sort of, I guess Newman's kind of different because he's worth so much money, but you know, maybe a Scooter Selwood. Do you upgrade Scooter Selwood if you have to downgrade a Hugh Greenwood type in order to facilitate that?
This is almost the exact situation that I'll be in probably next week, which is I've got Sam Paupepa and Scott Selwood like as my first bench position and last position on field in the midfield. And I could trade Paupepa out and upgrade Selwood, but that's going to leave me like really thin on the bench. So do you get enough points out of that? I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to do at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it because I've done it quite a lot, Mark, I find for me the decision really comes down to how much could you get burnt by decimating your rookies too much. So it's somewhat mitigated if you can find a downgrade option that you're happy with late in the season. That tends to be very difficult to do, though, because the thing you don't want to do is bring in one really good bench option, but then basically have a zero for your second emergency, because if you're faced with a double injury or an injury and suspension in that 1 week,
People with Fife and Ablett last week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, great. You have a great first up, but then your second up, like now you have to trade in order to avoid a donut, or you're only bringing in a 30 or 40 on field. So that's sort of the things that you should be considering when you're making those trades.
And which has really come down to probably the main philosophical difference between myself and you at this point of the season usually is that you're willing to trade in the DPP premium onto your bench. And my philosophy is generally keep trades for the last, like I'd rather just use them on injuries rather than provide bench cover. And I don't think that I back down from that. And I don't think you've really backed down from your position. And that's sort of, we've held those lines for a few years now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've softened on my stance a little bit because I've decimated my bench too hard in order to be able to do that. But in general, I do like trying to achieve that because just the flexibility that it opens up. But yeah, I agree, Mark. That's something that we've probably consistently differed on over the years, which our long-term listeners would have picked up on. So let's move on to the next sort of luxury trade option here. And this one's about Fife. He missed last week. If you kept him last week, I mean, surely it doesn't make a huge amount of sense to trade him this week.
I think if you kept him round 13, then that was the decision. And it probably turns out that trading him in round 13 was the right decision as soon as he missed the week after. But now I think that once you kept him the week before and then you kept him last week, I think he's a hold now. And gee, I hope he's back.
At least he's a unique compared to everybody that's already traded him out. So hopefully you can turn things around and punish the guys that have traded him out. Again, I think this comes down to strategy. So it's just, you're almost priced into doing this. Otherwise, like Mark's mentioned, you'd just be behind everyone who made the correct decision in hindsight 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
Next question is from at BenTabTabTab on Twitter. Nank versus Lynch, who goes? We've had heaps. I reckon 30 or 40% of the questions we had this week, Mark, was do we finally ditch Nank Hervis? He's definitely dropped right off. The question is, is this a rough patch or is this a regression to the mean?
I think that it's probably a 22-year-old trying to carry the ruck in a team that's had a pretty tough season, that they've had to fight out a lot of games right to the end, and hasn't had a lot of backup in that time either, and just what that's likely to do to the body of someone like that. And sometimes you do see in that situation that they that this is probably the most difficult month of the season for them, and then they can fight their way back out on the run home. I guess that I'm hoping that that is the case, but I'd say there's probably a 50% chance of that at the moment, so 50% chance that he comes good, 50% that he doesn't. And I think that, look, if you could push him to the bench and he could cover sort of mid-forwards or mid-forward rucks, I mean, that'd probably be a pretty good result. But I really think that you're coming down to how many trades do you have left and how low are you willing to go at this point. Like, I'm not sure how many trades people have got out there and whether they have a fully premium team. But if you do and you still have 10 trades left, then maybe moving Nank on is the way to go. But if you're sort of would be pushing yourself down to 5 or 6 trades in order to push Nank to the bench or move Nank on, then that seems pretty risky to me.
Yeah. I definitely wouldn't be moving Nank on if I didn't have Ryder. And even in that situation, I think it is fringe. Like you said, I think the better strategy, Mark, is to push him into your bench. But then the question becomes, as we've already just discussed, do you have enough cash generation? Are you not making too many sacrifices in order to upgrade to a true premium to push Nankervis out?
So yeah.
These are the questions that you have to ask yourself.
And we saw with last week, like Myers and Cousins both dropped, and I think there was a couple other rookies like at Scharenberg. Like your bench can become very thin very quickly with some of these later season rookies, and that can, like, if injuries do strike, then that can cause you huge problems. So that is a really good point. I'm struggling to figure out where I can have some money generation coming from. Like, does someone like trading out Cousins is not going to make me any money. Scharenberg and Ryan aren't ready to go up back. Like, maybe Parsons might actually earn some money finally. But yeah, earning that money, getting it into a rookie that's actually going to hold their spot is going to be pretty tricky. I think that where the trade becomes interesting is if you have cash and you can turn like Nankervis into Gorn.
And that's a question that we did get as well this week. But I think value is pretty important. And even though having Gorn's scoring well this week over Nank would definitely be fantastic, it could also backfire. Like, there is still a chance that Nank outscores Gorn. It's only Gorn's second game back from injury. And more importantly, he has a 27 in his price cycle. His break even is 184. So, like, I just...
He looked pretty good.
Yeah, he did. He did. But hopefully he scores 100 again and drops another, I think, 40K. If he scores 100, he'll drop another 40K. I know points are worth a lot more than cash the later we get in the season, but 40K is a lot to get in by waiting just 1 week. So, I'd probably wait.
Yeah. I mean, I know Nank has a high BE as well. So, yeah, it's a bit tricky.
All right, we'll move on into the bargain bin section now. We've got a players in the back line that we want to discuss here. And the question is from at Crips Tonight SC. Thoughts on JJ as a budget option? From Tom Stewart. So if you've listened to the show this season and caught Faz while he's been on, you probably would have heard him get pretty frustrated with JJ. He's currently priced at only 357K though, which is absolutely
about right.
Peanuts. Scored 21 in round 12, 58 in round 13, and 82 last round. Basically, he's copping the tag and is not dealing with it very well, similar to Sloan. But does this continue to happen to him? Does every team continue to apply this? Because, I mean, at that price point, like, absolute peanuts. I mean, I even make money from Heath Shaw. At this point, I'm so sick of Heath Shaw. Maybe I'll take a risk on him.
I know you say that, but I don't think you actually would pull the trigger on that one. I mean, look, can you do worse than Heath Shaw? he is playing this season like a $350,000 player and scoring like one as well.
Yeah, and when he was sort of starting the year off and rumors were that he was asking for like 800K. He seemed pretty far off that at the moment. So,
look, odds are that he would go back and average around the 85 mark, you would think. I know he averaged 94 last year, but that was like his best season by a mile and a premiership season. He might be a 85-90 sort of guy, which is pretty decent at his price, but is that someone that you wanted to be bringing into your team? I'm not sure that's someone you'd confidently bring into an on-field position.
He seems like a worse option on-field than Nick Newman, which you'd be concerned about, right? Because there's still questions whether or not we would be tempted to trade out Newman. So even though JJ presents a whole heap of value, I think I would agree with you, Mark, not playing like a premium at the moment.
And we should also mention that, like, if we're looking at probabilistic thinking, like, there's probably a 10% chance in there that he goes on and averages 95 from here and comes back to his form from last season. So there's definitely some risk in there that I can understand someone taking a calculated risk on him and him doing really, really well for them and being season defining. But I'd say that there's more than 80% chance that won't happen.
All right, Mark, to wrap up this week's show, let's just have a quick chat about the rookies. I don't think a huge amount of us are looking at downgrade options at the moment. We're probably side swapping premiums at this stage. And if you're bringing in bench cover, you're looking for value. But if you do happen to be requiring some cash for an upgrade downgrade this week, there's a few rookie options that I did want to talk about. The first we didn't get a question about, but noted that he did play his second game for the season this round, his first being round one. And that's Ryan Schoenmakers, 155,000, scored 76, available on the forward line. And then we got questions about the two rookies on the bubble. So that's Jonathan Beach, who's a Adelaide player available on the forward line, scored 57, had the bye, and then came back after the bye to score 49. And we've got Callum Brown, who also debuted before the bye, came back after the bye, so his two scores, 52 and 43. And then there's one more bloke here, Brennan Cox, same situation, debuted before the bye, came back after, priced at 117,000. I think the players that we got the most questions about were Beach v. Brown. So maybe let's start off with an X v. Y there. I mean, Brown does have the upside of being a mid-forward DPP player.
Yeah, I think the concern with all four of those guys is that in 3 weeks, none of them are playing. None of them have really set the light world on fire. I know I spoke to Jack, who's been on the show a couple of times this season, that and he thought that Beach probably wouldn't get selected this week, which makes me think out of those two, Brown. And I think if you're going to pick a rookie with low scoring and low job security, then having that dual position status would be pretty advantageous, especially if you could link him up with Greenwood or maybe even Shai Bolton. So out of those two, I think Brown is a fair way ahead, but there's a good chance that neither of them are even picked this week.
I agree with that. There's another mid-forward rookie, Mark, that's had a debut on the weekend. That's Josh DeLuca, another Fremantle bloke. He's absolutely basement priced at only 102,000. So that's another thing that he's got up his sleeve in terms of super coach selection.
Ross Lyon, just the gift that keeps on giving.
Yep. He'll be in this week, out next week, in this week, out next week. So at least he should play every alternate week just to really piss us off.
I watched him on the weekend and you wouldn't have seen him because you missed the first half, mate. But he was actually pretty good in the first half, looked really dangerous when Freo were on against the Cats, but completely went missing in the second half. So not sure what'll happen to him in the near future.
This is what we mean by if you're upgrading at this point in the season, you're having a downgrade to facilitate that. A lot of the times you're faced with rookie options that might actually cripple you the further down the track you go, because they're in for a couple of weeks to deal with an injury, but then they're back out. And especially when you're talking about teams playing for the final series, you're much more at risk with that. So Jonathan Beach, you'd have much less confidence about than Callum Brown. The closer we move to finals, you would have thought. And I guess that means that we pay extra attention to potentially players in the Fremantle team or the Brisbane team. Alex Witherden is another player that's also available as a back mid who had his debut on the weekend, scored 76, was a second rounder last year. Had quite a few Brisbane rookies be available this year. It's been a bit of a mixed bag though, Mark.
It has.
But back mid flexibility is rare to find, and the last time we found it in Perryman, a few people jumped for that exact reason.
Yeah.
Would you jump for Witherden?
I did like Witherden's game on the weekend against the Giants, scored 76 on debut, seems to have a pretty good kick, and they picked 21, and I think he's been spent a bit of time injured in the reserves, so they brought him in pretty quickly after that. I'd expect him to get some games, but might struggle to play out the year potentially, or they might just give him games at the line, so he's one I'd definitely like to see one more week from.
All right, Mark, let's move on to the captain's corner, and then we can wrap up the show for the week. In terms of looking at the most common loophole opportunities, it's a lot more varied now, Mark. The later in the season we get to, our teams start to diverge a little bit more from starting teams. So I'm going to assume that the ruck forward donut player hasn't changed too much, and start off by saying that if you have Strenodica, Frio's playing the last game of the round and you get full choice over the teams that you can VC with. If you have Darcy Cameron, like myself, Sydney are playing the first and you have absolutely none. Anyone that still has Hibbard would be able to loophole from the first three games, but they play Saturday afternoon, so not brilliant.
I'm sure there'll be some selection shocks and we'll all be missing players.
Yeah, Sharonberg, if he doesn't get back in,
he'll be back.
Collingwood only play Sunday at 3:20. You're very confident he'll be back, Mark?
Yeah, I think that Buckley made a mistake putting him back down to the reserves. I think he had 34 or 36 touches again in the VFL side on the weekend and kicked a goal. It'd be nice to see him actually get some midfield time in the actual senior team. I guess the issue is that Collingwood do have a pretty deep midfield and lots of competition for those spots.
Yeah. I don't have Cousins or Myers, but for those individuals that do, Essendon plays Sunday 1:10 and Hawthorn Sunday 3:20. So if they don't come back into the team, you'll also have them to loophole with.
I think both of those guys are also really good in the VFL. I wouldn't expect Myers back this week, though.
So, Mark, having said all that, I guess, why don't you hit us with who you are looking at, because you have the full range and that might help inform people who have a more restricted option.
Sure. So I think that there's two ways of going about it. And one is you vice-captain before danger, or one is you vice-captain danger. And two really good options before danger would be Bontempelli and Doherty. I think he's like a legitimate person to have in that conversation at the moment. But I really do like VCing danger, because Bont went on the weekend, he went first and scored 139, which is a massive game for him, and then Danger still beat him. So I really do like having the first crack at Danger, and I think new recruit Zach Merritt is probably a good chance against the Lions on Sunday at Etihad.
I think the only issue is that on Sunday, the teams that are playing don't have a lot of premiums that have been performing very consistently. So with Essendon, you've got Merritt, but he's not in a huge amount of teams. You've got Rockliffe and Beams, who Rockliffe has been scoring crap recently, and Beams just been injured. Zorko, I suppose, is an option, but he's not in a huge amount of teams either. Mitchell is an option as a captaincy. So I guess if you're going after Danger, looking for a safe bet, he's an option.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair call too. If you're talking about his consistency, that his second lowest game is 100, the only score you're not going to take from Danger is a one below 100. So as a backup, it's not a terrible pick.
And then you've got Collingwood, who have Scotty Pendlebury. If you are looking at a Frio play, wouldn't really trust Fife yet. So you're more likely to pick Neil. And at St Kilda, there's not really established sort of super coach midfielder. So the options are thin-ish. I know a few more people have Mitchell and Pendlebury. So they're probably the main two that I'd be looking at as a backup to Dangerfield if you can use him as a VC.
So I think then if you're going to do a VC on someone before Dangerfield, then they need to be someone with a ridiculously high upside. Like, you want someone that can go 150 plus and you can then lock that in.
Yeah, maybe Rory Sloan against Carlton. Yes, he can get tagged, but if he doesn't, he's going to have a massive game. So
Carlton will definitely tag him.
Those are the sort of risks that you got to take, right? Like, if he has a 30% chance of scoring 150 plus, or even a 10% chance, like, you're more likely to take him than a bloke who's definitely going to score 110, but probably won't score more than 125.
Yeah. Because if you're VCing before Danger, there is no point picking someone that's going to most likely to score between 110 and 120. Because what do you do in that situation?
Yeah, exactly. So even a Tom Lynch against North.
that's some wishful thinking, buddy.
Bont against West Coast, like you mentioned, Mark, I think is a good one. Sydney, you got Buddy, you got Heaney,
JPK.
Yeah, those are some options there. I suppose Doherty has shown a really high scoring potential as well, so you could potentially VC him as well.
Just lock in Danger.
All right, Mark, so that wraps up this week's show. Do you have anything to leave our listeners with?
Bombers about to go on a pretty sick run of wins, and it's going to be fun.
Yeah, nice one. Geelong has a pretty tough game this week, GWS away. So it will be interesting to see how we go, but we tend to play a little bit better against opposition that were ranked above us. So hopefully that goes okay. We did get a question, Mark, about different guests on the show. That question was from Gary Real, and somebody sort of said, why do you need to change something that's not broken? And we've got 16 of the top 20, and to an extent, I do agree with that, but I don't mind Gary's suggestion either about potentially having different guests. So just as an idea, I would like to put a call out to our listeners. If you think you'd be suitable to come on to do a podcast, if you think you'd be good at talking strategy, presenting ideas and that sort of thing, and also if you have a good scoring history to back you up, or you're scoring particularly well this year, feel free to shoot us an email at admin@supercoachcoach.com.au, or reach up over the forums or social media or whatever channel you'd like, it'll find a way to myself. Feel free to reach out, and we'd be happy to, yeah, potentially bring on a couple more guests on to the show, Mark.
Sounds like a good idea, mate. We've had a bit of a good contribution from some other guests so far this year.
Yeah, yeah. Faz and Dunny have definitely been great regulars over the course of the last couple of years, or a few years now. But I think we have had good sort of feedback about Jack when he has come on, Kefra, and just having a little bit of a variety is nice. In the past, Mark, we used to quite aggressively target the winners from the year before. So I don't mind the selection. And I like the idea of opening it up to our listeners as well, Mark, and maybe getting some of them onto the show.
Good call.
All right, so that's it for this week's show, and we'll catch you all next week. See ya.
See ya.